Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. I personally take Super Beets when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beets gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at IntelligentBeets.com. That's IntelligentBeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today I'm going to introduce you to a very unique doctor who has a very, very innovative vision for how medicine can go forward. You know, medicine is foundering because we're too highly based on a high-tech pharmaceutical model. And today we're going to talk to a physician who's viewed life from both sides, from the high-tech conventional side, but he's carving a new path towards a type of medicine that is sustainable and low-tech and very, very naturally oriented. He's Dr. Ronald Weiss, and I came upon him because I saw an article that has this headline: North Jersey doctor to grow food as medicine practice on Morris County farm. And so it is that today I've invited the selfsame doctor, Dr. Ronald Weiss, who is currently dividing his time between a new innovative practice. He's a doctor farmer, but he's also assistant professor at the Rutgers New Jersey Medical School in Newark. So welcome to Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Weiss, and congratulations on your new enterprise. We want to find out all about it.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Hoffman.
My pleasure. Yeah, so talk a little bit away from, because you're still blowing a little on that microphone of yours. So according to the article, you embarked on your practice on the conventional side. You've been taking care of Hudson counties, that's a part of New Jersey, northern New Jersey, where you've been taking care of the sickest residents of this, impoverished area of New Jersey, a lot of urban dwellers, for 25 years. You're an internal medicine doctor, but it turns out that you want to change the paradigm and reinvent it. So tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yes. Well, my journey began, it's a long road. my journey began at my alma mater, New Jersey, Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School, where today I'm a professor. Before that, actually, professionally, it began in college. I attended Rutgers University, and I was granted a baccalaureate degree in botany. I've had a lifelong romance and interest in the growing of plants since I was a small child, and I finally studied it seriously in college and got a botany degree. I then went on to Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School and got a medical degree from there. After that, I did an internship and residency in internal medicine at George Washington University Medical Center in D.C. And about a year after graduating, my father was suddenly diagnosed with end-stage metastatic pancreas cancer. And this was after only about 2 or 3 weeks of severe abdominal pain. And what happened next is, you know, this was a catastrophic event for our family. We took him to the, you know, most well-known cancer hospital in the world, and he was told that he had 1 to 3 months to live and to get his affairs in order.
And that is often the grim prognosis with pancreatic cancer. Yeah. It's sometimes referred to as a 90-day cancer because it just rapidly dispatches you. So,
Yes, and he, you know, my father was an attorney. He was about 70 years old, 69 years old. He was a very wise man. He was offered, you know, the primary treatment at that time was 5-fluorouracil, which gave an 85% no response rate and a 15% chance of maybe some small extension of life, but that's it. Or some experimental protocols. And my father decided to pack his bags and go home and prepare for death. And, you know, being a young doctor who was just newly minted and turned out into the world, and I struggled with this. I had to move home to take care of him, and I was in that house with him. And this was difficult for me to accept.
Right, and obviously, you know, with your medical training, you had learned all the advanced techniques of medicine, but you felt virtually powerless to change the course with, you know, such a potentially inevitable demise.
Absolutely, and I had taken care of many patients in my, you know, in the previous 3 years, I'd taken care of patients just like him, and I knew what the inevitable end was.
Right,
I gave them chemo. I treated them as was the standard care, you know, that was recommended, and I knew what was coming.
Well, so, you know, this is actually points out kind of a paradox, because doctors often readily offer conventional cancer therapies to their patients. But in a recent study that I saw, many doctors themselves are reluctant to undertake conventional cancer therapies because they've seen it not work. They often eschew conventional cancer therapies. And even for their relatives, sometimes they opt out of conventional cancer therapies, which is kind of a double standard, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's a difficult situation because I know, you know, it's the doctors can probably understand this better than the patients who are desperate to just cling to anything or anything that they can grab to help onto to help them. They just don't have the experience that the doctor does in seeing that these things really are often not valid. Mm-hmm. And if, as a matter of fact, the, you know, 5-FU is no longer the primary treatment. It's now GemZAR, but it really, you know, other than giving, I think, another week or so of survival, it doesn't really do. There have been no significant improvements in the past 23 years or so since my father's diagnosis. And so, yes. And now pancreas cancer, I believe, is the fourth leading cancer in men in this country and probably fifth in women. So it's a significant problem. So, getting back to the story, I was desperate. My father was, you know, overwhelmed, and I figured the best thing I could do was just start reading about crazy things, things that nobody had taught me in medical school or were not presented to me, things that were outside my realm of knowledge and out of the standard medical world, the academic world. And I just randomly started reading about everything from Chinese medicine to ashrams in India to yoga to acupuncture to shark cartilage to vitamins and Laetril from, you know, almond pits. And I finally settled on food because, you know, it was so familiar to me. And I guess I felt most comfortable with that. And I started looking about into dietary regimens. And I happened to come across some good experiences that people had voiced having followed the macrobiotic diet,
mm-hmm.
which is a plant-based whole foods diet originating centuries ago in Central Europe. And in its current reincarnation in the latter part of the 20th century, it was championed by a man by the name of Michio Kushi, a Japanese gentleman, who I took my father to see. His office was in Boston. We took him up there, and you know, I, out of desperation, it was something that didn't seem so foreign to me. I took my father up there. He evaluated my father. He looked at his soles of his feet, you know, things that I were never taught to do, the palms of the hand, things I didn't understand. He told my father he was eating too much chicken. How he discerned this, I have no idea. It seemed crazy to me at the time, but I had no option. So he proceeded to recommend that my father go on a severely restricted diet. And this diet basically consisted of, and now for people who, I mean, there are all kinds of varieties and flavors of macrobioticism, but I believe that this was the most severe. Mm-hmm. He placed my father basically.
By the way, I have familiarity with this because we just met, but I didn't reveal to you that in my first years of practice of medicine in the 1980s, I was part of that circle. I was working with Michio Kushi and macrobiotic counselors, and my orientation to treating many diseases was to put patients on a vegetarian macrobiotic diet. I've since modified that approach, but I personally espoused a vegan macro diet, you know, eating brown rice and beans and seaweed and things like that, and lots of green leafy vegetables and so on. So I'm very familiar with that regimen.
Oh, and you were absolutely on the right track, as it turned out. And what we began to see in my father, well, it was even more limited. I guess
it was an extreme. In other words, the therapeutic version. It wasn't like the healthy person's version. It was like the cancer version of macrobiotics, right?
Well, because I never talked to him after that. He apparently had some intuition that my father needed these specific guidelines. Mm-hmm. He basically ended up eating, the greens that you talked about, all of the cruciferous greens and the leafy greens, brown rice, seaweed. He was able to have some root vegetables like carrots and parsnips and things like that, but absolutely no potatoes or nightshade vegetables. He was not allowed to have fruit, and he, other than the brown rice, he was allowed to have some very limited grains. I remember buckwheat, but definitely not wheat or other things. Mm-hmm. And so, in any event, he placed my father on this diet. My father started to eat this diet. You know, it was cooked in, we couldn't have aluminum, it was cooked in stainless steel, and the whole show.
Right.
And I thought it was crazy at the time, but my father seemed to latch on to it because it was the only thing anyone had offered to him.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of people know that the pain of pancreatic cancer is often described as some of the most severe cancer pain that exists. And my father was having severe abdominal pains. And miraculously, within 3 days or so of starting this diet, his pains were gone. The pains just vanished. Within a week, his appetite was robust.
Hmm.
And he actually, within a week and a half, he was feeling well. Within 2 weeks, he went to the gym. Within 3 weeks, he was running every day.
Wow.
He was back in the office, in his law office, full time, doing what he loved, which was, you know, being a lawyer. And every day, every week, there would be new advances, new his bowels, he had been completely, you know, obstructed,
right?
Constipation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was going completely better than he'd ever gone in his life. Everything, and we were stupefied by this. In 3 months later, after he'd begun this, his oncologist sent him for a CAT scan to see what was going on because he felt so well. Mm-hmm. And the CAT scan, now you have to remember, my father had massive metastatic tumor progression all over the place in his intra-abdominal cavity. His liver was riddled with mets. His pancreas was basically obliterated by these tumors. And after 3 months of this diet, a CAT scan showed about a 30% reduction in all t- tumor masses.
Wow, powerful.
And you have to remember, he had not chosen to do any other treatment.
Yeah, and it's not a placebo effect. I mean, one could say that he was imbued with confidence in the diet and felt better. But when tumors shrink objectively on CAT scans, something really is going on.
Yeah. So he continued to do well. Continued to, and I might add, during this time, the most important thing that he obtained was the will to live and the belief that he was not going to die. And that was so critical to his enjoyment of life. I cannot emphasize that. You know, when someone is given chemo and basically not told that you're going to be cured or live, you know, you face death every day. And although, you know, he was never told that these plants would cure him either, he felt there was such a sense of wellness within him, and he felt so good that he felt that he was going to live.
Right. His hair didn't fall out. He didn't get blisters in his mouth.
He didn't have side effects. He only had good side effects from eating. Mm-hmm. So 9 months later, still doing better and better, his oncologist wanted to see what in the world was going on, ordered a second CAT scan. This CAT scan showed about a 50% reduction in all the tumor masses in his abdomen. About a year later, still doing wonderfully, we took him back to the department chair at the cancer hospital we'd first visited to, because we were interested in seeing if there had been any new, you know, developments as far in research, or perhaps a new drug had come out or a new treatment for pancreatic cancer. We wanted to check in with him. When we walked my father into the office, and the doctor turned white as a ghost when he saw my father, I remember. And the first thing he asked my father is what he was doing there, because, you know, all the cohorts my father had entered with were long gone. And when my father started to tell him that he owed his vitality to eating seaweed, brown rice, you know, kale, collards, the doctor became completely disinterested.
Did not ask
my father another question.
Yeah, it's almost as if a shade descends over their eyes when it's something that they can't understand, they can't accept, and it doesn't fit into the paradigm. Yeah,
didn't fit in. And what shocked me, and you know, you have to remember, I'm a newly minted doctor, only a year out of my residency.
You're idealistic, and you know you haven't been burnt out by years of indoctrination, so you're still open minded.
And I, you know, I have a curiosity in me. I'm still not so far from. Well, we're all students all of our lives, but I was really not very far from my formal student days, and I didn't understand. It was a mystery and shocking to me that someone would come in with this very difficult problem and say, hey, I'm cured. I did this. Mm-hmm. I took this potion or that. I waved a dead chicken around my head three times, and now everything is gone and I feel great.
Your natural inclination would be to investigate it. Yeah. Yeah.
To further delve into what this person was doing, because that's how populations and mankind gains knowledge. It's by trial and error.
Well, how naive you were to think that, though, in those days, because you know medicine clearly doesn't have more and more so, I think, and I think your new project is demonstrating this. Medicine more and more is incorporating these paradigms, but you know, for a lot of doctors, you know, anything that's outside the realm of chemo, radiation, surgery does not exist when it comes to cancer.
And absolutely. And at that point, you know, I felt many feelings that day as I sat in the office. I felt as a doctor that I felt, you know, I don't know, somewhat, you know, because I had engineered this thing for my father. I felt kind of discredited. I mean, I looked at my father. I knew this was not magic. I wasn't a kook. I couldn't have made this up. I had the CAT scan results, and I didn't feel good about that experience, and I decided on that day that I was going to follow a different path, and that I knew that what had happened to my father was real. I knew there was a reason for it, and although I didn't know why what was recommended to him worked, I decided to change what I was doing to integrate that into my practice of medicine to help patients, because I owed it to the patients.
Well,
now
absolutely.
That I knew this. And so just to put the end of this story, my father lived a total of 18 months. He had excellent performance status, great functionality. He enjoyed life and thought he was going to live until a hasty decline in the last, I would say, month or two before he passed away. And I think that to this day, what would have happened if maybe he could have started this earlier, if we had known about the cancer a little earlier, or definitely if he'd known about it 10 or 20 years beforehand, but we don't have that luxury. But the amazing thing that I know today is that on a molecular basis, we're beginning to understand why these things happened to my father, and why, from an evidence-based realm, we can explain why these things happen, why my father made these great advances, and it's not hocus pocus. Those were medicines he was eating, and they were medicines that shrunk his cancer. So that is the trajectory I'm on here with this farm. We're growing these medicines, and we prescribe them as medicines to help people prevent illness and reverse chronic illness.
Well, this is a great inflection point for us to pause, because we divide these podcasts into two. This is how you launched your journey. And so what we're going to do is we'll stipulate this is part one. In part two, we invite our listeners to rejoin us as you trace your evolution from a conventional medical doctor to realizing your dream to becoming a doctor as farmer, a doctor as a botanist, a doctor as a natural plant-based medicine prescriber. We'll talk about that in part two. Our guest is Dr. Ronald Weiss. He is a physician who is growing food as medicine on his Morris County farm. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.